Translation. When I stayed for some days as guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradev, took shelter of my arms, which were marked with the Gandiva bow, to kill the demon named Nivatta Kavacha. O King, descendants of Ajamida, at the present moment I am bereft of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose influence I was so powerful. Purport. The heavenly demigods are certainly more intelligent, powerful, and beautiful, and yet they had to take help from Arjuna because of his Gandiva bow, which was empowered by the grace of Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is all-powerful, and by his grace, his pure devotee can be powerful as he may desire. And there is no limit to it. And when the Lord withdraws his power from anyone, he is powerless by the will of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Okay. Although I don't deserve, but I count on your blessings because I have to say something on this short verse. They gave me opportunity to meditate on amazing Arjuna's qualities. Okay. Verse again. When I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradeva, took shelter of my arms, which are marked with the Gandiva bow, to kill the demon named Nivatta Kavacha. O King, O descendant of Ajamid, at the present moment I am bereft of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose influence I was so powerful. So, first you narrate shorter story about this Nivatta Kavacha demons, and later on about powerful Gandiva bow. So, quite a little bit of background, like just before Kurukshetra war, Yudhishthira actually requested Arjuna that we're going to face very formidable enemies. So I want you to go to heavenly planets and obtain and learn the skill of weapons, celestial weapons. So Arjuna took advice and then went to Mandara Mountain there. And when he entered there first with his Gandiva bow, there was a sage there. He said, you don't need to enter him with the bow. We are all peaceful. Just leave your bow and then come and join us. And then Arjuna said, no, I go there. My order from my brother, I never separate from my bow. I came to seek blessings of Indradeva or whatever to get celestial weapons. So he could see that he's serious. Then Arjuna started to perform austerities there, actually. Very severe austerity, similar to Dhruva Maharaj. First he would eat one piece of fruit every week, and then every 2 weeks, eventually stop breathing. And after about 5 months or something, he saw the like a demon disguised in a boar. He was attacking him, very fearful, dangerous looking boar. So he was aiming at Arjuna, and Arjuna quickly got his Gandiva bow. And at the same time, when he was wanted to shoot, another hunter appeared and they shoot arrows together. So then there was a fight. Whose boar is? Arjuna was boosting. By my power, I killed this boar. Another person also was claiming not. And they arose a fight. They fighting eventually. It was Lord Shiva. On the last moment, Arjuna was so overpowered by might of Shiva that, you know, he was wondering, who is that person? You know, he was fighting fiercely. He was surrounded by fire at the end. He didn't know anything. And then Shiva disclosed his feature and told him that, I'm Lord Shiva, I'm very pleased with your fighting, with your spirit, with your determination. And Arjuna asked him, can I get your weapon by which you destroy the universe at the end? So he got the Pashupata Astra. He said, but he told him, never use it against humans, only against celestials. Otherwise you will destroy the whole universe if you use it against humans. He gave him a mantra how to call that Pashupata. And then, eventually, Indradev send Matali, his charioteer, with mighty, powerful chariot driven by 100 horses. Very powerful, unusually looking celestial chariot to pick up Arjuna. He said there were even nagas there, snakes on this chariot decorating it. And then he took him to heavenly planets there. And Arjuna stayed there about 5 years, actually. This could be probably in a time when they were in exile. But he spent 5 years there. And Indra there was teaching him all kinds of weapons. When he mastered that, Arjuna, Lord Indra, they were asking for the Guru Dakshin. And he said, I'll do anything. And then Lord Indra finally said, there are demons, they call Niveta Kavachas. They got a very special boon from Brahma that they will not be destroyed by demigods. So they were so powerful and proud that they didn't ask boon that they don't be destroyed by human. And you are most powerful human with your Gandiva bow. So can you help us, Arjuna, yes? And then Indra, Lord Indra gave him again his chariot, Matali, and all kinds of weapons which he earned by his skills during these 5 years, and went there. And those Nivita Kavachas, they were kind of demoniac-looking, fearsome creatures, like reptilians maybe or something. And they were living under the sea, in the middle of the ocean. And as Arjuna was approaching with a chariot in that place, he was all surrounded by ferocious steaming fishes and whales, and then many ships sailing, you know, with full of wealth, full of gold. So he entered inside the water, and he blew his conch on the gate, and there was fearsome sound. And then all these warriors came. There was millions of them, they said, these Nivita Kavachas. And they were fighting fiercely, as usually the similar battles he described in many pages, with all kinds of weapons, and then they resorted to mystical weapons. And a few times, Arjuna told, I'm just finished, overpowered, although he was killing them left and right. But then he would recall his celestial weapons, and they would save him. Like, interesting how, like, you know, fiery weapon you contract with water weapon, and water weapon with fiery weapon, and then wind weapon with the mountain weapon. That's very interesting, how you contract wind weapon with the mountain. I guess probably, you know, some mountains are always high, so they block the wind or something like that. Very, very unusual. And then mystical, you know, weapons. And Arjuna find a way to destroy them, all of them. There were so many bodies, millions of them. The Matali couldn't drive a chariot on the hard land. He was flying, all of them. So finally, we destroyed the city, but Arjuna was amazed how this city where they are living so opulent, more than Indradevs. So that before this was belonging to Indra, but then Nivita Kavachas, they got boon, they just kicked out all demigods and possessed that place. So, but when he was flying out, then Matili, what's his name, chariot of Indra, asked him, there are another set of demons. So Lord Indra told me, when you finish those, please do something, because there's another set of demons which were together, kind of friends. Also, they got a boon from, earned by their mother. She was worshipping Lord Brahma, and he also gave the boon that these demons, your sons, will not be destroyed by demigods. Again, out of pride, they constructed big flying city. And they're living there. Sometimes out of fun, they would just come down. They knew they cannot be destroyed by demigods. They would just harass demigods, and they just go back. Oh, this was good. Nice there, yeah. They were just out of fun. But for no reason, they would harass demigods. So demigods couldn't do anything. So therefore, Lord Indra couldn't find a way how to get rid of them. Therefore, Arjuna was there. So again, he attacked them, Kalayakainas. So he fought with them again, very difficult battle. And on the end, actually, he was thinking he's finished, he's going to die, because he was, you know, surrounded by water completely, like the middle of the ocean. Earth disappeared. Everything was black. You know, he couldn't see any enemies, couldn't see anyone, chariot. Mithila was alone. He was just totally overpowered. But then he remembered this Shiva's weapon he got, and he called this mantra, to call this Pashupata Astra. And then fearsome personified Pashupata Astra appeared. Even he was afraid. And he dried all this water within moments, completely. And he was able to conquer them and kill them all, and then destroy their also flying city as well, kill them all. Everybody was amazed, like, how power of Arjuna was just incredible, that there was no man besides few, like Bhishma, maybe a few others, so powerful like him. Karna was nearly also near, that he was so powerful. He was just, you know, like might personified. He was Arjuna's best friend. He had all these celestial weapons. He had mystical powers. He was good looking, strong, you know, like powerful kshatriya. He was not like, it was nothing like, I don't know, like say on this planet you have story of Robin Hood, for example. He was a mighty archer. I don't know if he was existing or not, but anyway, but you know, everywhere he was famous, so called. So, you know, but all what he earned was on his own skills, and he had some skills, and his opponent knew he was very powerful, he's a good horseman, he's a good fighter, watch out with him, you know. But it's not like Arjuna was just incredibly powerful, you know, that nobody could stand in front of Arjuna. So upon returning, Indra was pleased, so he came back with his weapon, and then narrated the whole story to his brothers. And then here also, he was carrier of Gandiva bow. The bow is just incredible. He said that there's a few stories about it, how it came. Probably in different kalpas there are different stories. One of it is that it was made from bones of Dadichi again. Like Dadichi Muni gave his bones for Indra's weapon. But in this kalpa, perhaps, Dadichi gave his bones to fashion the Gandiva bow. Seems to me that this Dadichi Muni was just his service. He performed austerity, he gained the power, and gave his body for the demigods, for good cause. Interesting. Anyway, but another story, that Brahma fashioned three bows personally. And then they said there was about 14 celestial bows present in this Dvapara Yuga, and all Pandavas got one of them, and then also Bhishma Dev got one of them, then few sons of Draupadi got, then Abhimanyu got one as well, and then Karna also got Vijaya bow, but it's not much mentioned that he ever used. It was very, very powerful. This debate was more powerful than Gandiva, very powerful bow. He got from Parashuram, and then funny, son of Bhima, Gadotkach, he got one. Got a bow which belonged to Ravana. He had that bow. But this Gandiva bow, he said, is so mighty, so powerful. He was tall like palm tree. Huge. He had double curve, you know, one, double curved. He had 108 strings, not just one, so he could fire 108 arrows at a time. He was extremely, extremely heavy. That they say that only five people possibly could use the Gandiva bow. Arjuna, of course, and then said, Bhishma could use, Krishna, of course. And then he's mentioned Karna, he could use as well. Very powerful bow, just no ordinary man could. So he said, each time Arjuna would swing the string, it would produce thunder sound, which would terrify the opponents. And also, each time he would release the arrow, like flashing light would come and blind the opponents. A very powerful bow, extremely. I said that Arjuna got his Gandiva, and a few weeks ago was about Gandiva forest discussion, that Lord Agni wanted to devour the Gandiva forest because he had indigestion due to long years consuming the ghee from fire sacrifice and consume the herbs. But there's a fuller story than that. That this Gandiva bow, when Duryodhana went to the, was taken to the lower legion, when he wanted to give up his body due to being his ego, being insulted by Pandavas saving him from Gandharvas. Then when he was taken there, they told him that we gonna come and assist you to prepare ground for your so-called victory, future victory. We want to establish a dharma on this planet. So we're gonna take birth as a ferocious animals in the Gandhava forest, in the Kandava. Ferocious animals and reptiles. We're gonna harass all brahmanas there and sages. So this was another kind of connected pastime that they wanted to get rid of those demons. See? So when Agni, they already killed them all, they just burned them. But point that Takshaka snake was also taking shelter on this forest, and he got boon from Lord Indra that he will not be burned, he will protect him. So 7 times Lord Agni tried to burn the Kandava forest, he couldn't. He was protected, he didn't know what to do. And then of course, to do this, you know, I don't know who sent for Arjuna. Arjuna and Krishna were present to try that, I think. And then, of course, Arjuna had to fight with Indra. He conquered Indra because, in no way. So at that time, Arjuna asked, well, I'm not able. You know, there's so much power there. I need a special weapon to do this. So then Agni went to Varuna. And Varuna, at that time, he was in possession of Gandiva because this bow was going down. He was in many possession, many demigods for certain years. So finally, he was in Varuna possessions or the end. So then he gave him the Gandiva bow, gave him the chariot, special celestial chariot with Gandhara horses. And then they said Kaumadaki club, I think it is Krishna's club, was given as well, and 2 quivers of inexhaustible arrows. You never exhaust. Funny, when Arjuna was fighting Shiva in earlier pastime, his 2 quivers got exhausted. First time, he was just puzzled. How is that possible? They were inexhaustible. Only with that time, with Shiva made that illusion. So inexhaustible arrows. So he was able to defeat, actually, Indradev. So therefore Indra was counting on him later on, that he's so powerful, he could help me in this Niveta Kavacha demons. So this is how he obtained Gandiva bow to fight. So that's about powerful Gandiva and his holder, Arjuna. One thing when I was reading this, incredible, like I was just hoping in my mind, why demons are created? Out of this, Nivita Kavachas and Kala Kayanas, whatever his name, they just out of no reason, just harassing the demigods. So why demons are created? Of course, you know, Krishna facilitates desire of everybody. He's in there, he's desiring them. So by becoming demons, they have a chance somehow, someday, sometime, get some mercy somewhere and get purified. So he allows them. At the same time, there's a karma arrange maybe that, you know, demigods got harassed. Because there's no peace in everywhere in this material creation. Really. You end up on heavenly planets, some demons decide to possess a planet where you reside and enjoy. You know. Many times happened during Srimad Bhagavatam, when you read, just demons have to flee, just vacate, you know, there's no peace, there's no enjoyment. So it may happen, you go to heavenly planets. Some of us may desire to go to heaven. It's beautiful, it's amazing. But there's no peace anywhere, this kind of, to instruct us, there's no peace anywhere in this material creation. So why demons are created? Like, interested in Kashyapa Muni, is the same father of both. I just created both of them, Dityas and Adityas. It's interesting, you know. So that Kashyapa is one of the five progenitors who created every living entity on this planet. So Kashyapa Muni is one of them. So interesting, the tendency, our tendency is, you know, somebody have demoniac tendency. But you don't need to wonder about, because in us also there is demoniac tendency. So extreme demoniac tendency in somebody is just present asuras. That's all. It's the same thing. But in us, there is a demoniac tendency. See? We have demoniac tendency, and Krishna just facilitates our desire to go through suffering. Therefore, is suffering there. You know, this is like a learning ground for material creation to teach us the lesson. So Krishna allow us to descend to lower, lower, lower species to see whether we'll be happy or not. That's it. But Krishna sanctions kind of these demoniac qualities. Let's say from five factors of action, ultimately is Paramatma is the last one, ultimate sanctioner. He allows us. See? So why somebody's desire will be fulfilled in such a way? Krishna kind of see the full picture. There's a chance maybe. You know, or why somebody good intention would come out bad? Like Brahma's creation in the beginning. We created like so many nasty creatures at the beginning, demons. This was not his attention. That's interesting. Yeah. Because Krishna is Anumanta. Yeah. He permits everything. Like, if you don't accept good advice, there is a super soul in us. Don't accept good advice, then touch the fire. Prabhupada mentioned a few times, example. Child want to touch a fire, okay, touch. And when you touch, then there's a chance you'll never do it again, otherwise you want. So Krishna allows, see. So same as we have to fight with our tendency, demoniac tendency in us. I mean, I'm struggling with that constantly, just dualities constantly. You know, the basic demoniac tendencies as in us. So there's a battle between good and evil always, so there is battle in us as well. But we have only one battle, actually. Just only one battle we have. No other. It's a battle with false ego. That's our main battle, without false ego. Now we may think that, oh, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, jidatmana prashantasya paramatma samohita shitoshna sukha dukha tatamana pamana yog. If, when you conquer the mind, super soul is reached. Doesn't say false ego, but the mind. I'm not contradictory at all, because false ego is such a subtle element. And how he can manifest himself in this material world? Is it possible? Just if he just exists, does he manifest? Who cares? But then there's a hierarchy there. There's intelligence. There's a mind. Gross senses. Finally, false ego just cannot manifest himself without gross senses. But before that, goes to polluted intelligence, polluted mind, and the sense is just neutral. You just do what mind says. You know. So this is how false ego manifests in this material world. You do action, you do things which is just pride. So that's how it works. There's only one ego, actually. We call it false ego. There's only one ego. But when acts through polluted intelligence, polluted mind, it calls false. Actually, just one. Ego means identification, our real identification, we know that. The false identification is something else. So we are always under somebody, you know. Senses are always servant. Good master, or bad master. Senses must obey. So now I want to just see one small thing, how false ego in regard of 10 offenses. mean, I always speak about offenses because I'm struggling like hell with it myself, so I have to speak. How to see the 10 offenses in regard to false ego? What's the first one? Come on. Yeah, I mean, this is so obvious. Blessing devotees. It's just false ego. Like, you see the faults, and then you think a little bit better. You just can't help it. You know, this is how it goes. Second, consider names of demigods, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal, you know, so. Holy name you chant is so powerful. But then, you know, you may say, demigods also, they have powerful names, Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu, Durga. It's out of false ego again, you know, why should be somebody who is on the top? This one is, you actually don't care, neither for demigods much, but just out of false ego, you know, put it down. There's nothing higher. So, third one. Oh, that's a big one, you know. Why should I, you know? But eventually, you tell me so many things, but, you know, is it, you know, one of the greatest offenses considered the guru to be ordinary man? Because you see into perfection. If you serve your guru, you just see, you know, he has to maintain his body, he has the same, you know, bodily needs. Get familiarity. So why should I follow the guru? You know, I know the person, once I was hearing conversation, overheard, I was just sitting, somebody said, oh, so my guru told me, I wanted to do something, there's a chance for me to earn some money somewhere to go, you know, and then I was asking guru, should I do this or should I do this? And guru told me, no, not to do it, don't do this. He said, but I did it, and I earned so much money. Like, you know. So, you know, you don't always build consequence on long run. So, that way. Third one, or fourth one. What's the fourth? Battlecraft code. There's so many scriptures, you know, why Veda says that's the only way. Bible said Jesus is the only way. Veda said, it's the only way. Kala onasti eva nasti eva nati gati raneta. Chanting is the only way. There's no other way, no other way, no other way. Everybody says that. So you kind of start to get mixed up a little bit. But this one say also, this one also, this one. I get like frequent argument with, you know, some of my relatives. This one he says, this, you know. He gets, you know, therefore reject religion. That's a worst type of blasphemy against Vedic literature, probably. Just to reject our religion. You know, for some years I was an atheist myself. I was forced for something which just didn't like it. You know, couldn't see good example. You know, just reject everything. Most of the people are like that. We don't need some kind of imaginary entity out there, you know. I know what's moral, I know, you know, so. Sixth one or fifth one? Is it fifth one or sixth one? Blasphemy literature is a. And then sixth offense. Sixth offense. Oh, I mean to interpret. What's a fool? You see, we recite every day, I just kind of forget. I will give some modern interpretation of the whole name, of course, a false ego there as well. You know, you add some new things. You add things. We like to add things, to, you know, kind of mixture. One thing, I mean, just something which I noticed lately, you know, here also. It's a little bit to do with us, but I noticed when they're taking Tulasi in the morning, Tulasi is there. They pay obeisances and they show the Tulasi, please. You know, they take Tulasi. This is okay. This is a person, very dear to Krishna. She's a person taking her to put on the table. But then, lately somebody started to do with other arati items as well. You know, I understand this sentiment. There's a sentiment, but this sentiment is concoction, which is slowly kind of odd things, not with evil kind of attention. You know, but then in a lamp and a flower, it's fine, but, you know, point is just pay obeisances after respect, that's a maha. And just do an offer to Prabhupada. They don't wave, like, treat Prabhupada as a person. You go there, and then what they do? Like, waving, like, Imagine Prabhupada is here in the row. You offer to him first flower. Touch his nose. I mean, let him smell. Don't just go rituals there. You know, let's use common sense. Prabhupada is person with us. So all these small things like adding. For example, a Christmas tree and then a nice decoration. Somebody, let's put some more jewelry. Let's put small jewelry. Put this. On the end, it looks just ugly scene because it's covered the heaps of jewelry. Tree is invisible. So that's the thing when we add to Prabhupada's simple instruction out of sentiment, something slowly, you know, turns out like, you know, Guru is most pleased when he just exactly, if you do what he tells you, bring me water and you go there, boil the milk. You know, I don't want that. So Prabhupada is most pleased, like anyone, if I ask you to do something and you exactly do, I said, that's the most pleasing, you know. But if you add some speculation, it's same for Prabhupada. He gave us the program. Don't need to add. It's complicated enough. You know, just use a common sense, you know. Of course, there's an instruction when Prabhupada said, add more, like in the process of deity worship, you know, you can expand the polo plant according to circumstances, your ability. But some things, he didn't ask us. There's so many things we add in things, like in the singing. We know that we don't need to go into that just because it drags me all across the universe. So adding things. Quick, 8 offense. 7. Commit sinful activities. Of course, you know, I can do anything I want. You know, I'm chanting, but I can do anything, you know. You know, it's not like I'm already, it's out of false ego again. 8. Holy, chanting of the holiness. Rituality, the same. Yeah, the same. Out of false ego, he just can't focus on one thing. He cannot admit that something is higher than anything else. That's a false ego. False ego is on the top. That's what's highest. False ego is highest. And then, 9 or 10? Faithless person. How false ego is manifested there? To instruct faithless person. Oh, I mean, the simple. I guess it comes to that, you try to defeat the person. You know, you just give him too much too soon. And most of us, we all been in the streets. It comes to that, I just want to grab him and then let him disappear in payment. All your arguments are just finished. But he's not going to be devotee ever. You just defeat his ego. He's not going to, you know. I mentioned once also that there's a Druta Karma when he was corresponding about his Vedic archaeology book with some Christian. He was kind of scholarly Christian. I don't know, was he priest, but a scholar. And then he just defeated him. He was very politely. They exchanged the letters. Very politely. Was very expertly. You know, didn't press him anyway, but he defeated him completely. And he come to the end, this scientist said, whatever, scholar said, it's a, wait a minute. I just have to go back to my Bible and study more deeply to find answers to, you know, you're not gonna bring somebody to the point that he spent his 40, 50 years on something which he has to drop down and realize it's false. All this, like medical industry, you know, there's so many holes in medical science which has proven futile, so detrimental for health, but they're just still holding on because he got a degree after so many years, he's expert, he's respectable. He's not going to give up even if it's true. Therefore, my faith in this medicine, allopathic, is just zero, man. You know, maybe because I'm fortunate, my body is still function, but there's so many holes there. So this pride, but what does? See, so one fight, false ego. So I could do so many things, but if somebody has something to add. Kind of, we don't want to drag you all over the place. So it was a bit disorganized, but somebody had some thoughts on. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, thank you for the class, by the way. You're talking about demons, powerful demons that were obviously blessed by Brahma, that they couldn't be defeated by the demigods. And I was generally thinking in terms of like karma and taking different places of consciousness, you know, in different forms of life. So we often think like the heavenly planets, materially are the highest, and then you have the human form of life, and then generally animals, and in terms of reactions, often we think like lower form of life is animal, or I guess dependent of the situation, very sinful is going to hell, you know, to go through that suffering and purification. But then it's strange that some demons seemingly have, they're very sinful, very demoniac, but they seem to have facilities that are much greater than humans and much more enjoyment. So it seems that they have piety in one sense. Although they're very impious, they must have some pieties. And we often hear about the subterranean heavenly planets that actually sometimes they're even much more great than the heavenly planets, than parts of the heavenly planets. So how do they get those facilities unless they have piety? It's,
I guess at least those who are inscribed in Srimad Bhagavatam, they still follow in some degree or more degree Vedic way to obtain whatever they have. We know many demons, they were very respectful Vedic culture, you know, charity to Brahmanas. Da, da, da. So I don't see anything else what it could be. Like, what means actually demon? I mean, if somebody has some thoughts, please add. I don't want to drag you across, but austerity, another thing, they can obtain, for example, from demigods very easily, like, you know, Shiva, you can cut your head off and get whatever you want, if you survive. I don't know how you did it, you cut my head, but when you cut, you're finished, what are you gonna, so, anyway, you know, so, I guess. But then still, there's a piety there probably because there's opulent lives. But then I don't know. Krishna's Bhagavad Gita said that those who are demoniac, I cast them down to the lowest form of life. So I guess, you know, like Karna was demon in last life. I don't know, that was before that. So it's a kind of mess. You know, you could gradually descend down. It's interesting, Haribol.
I was just thinking, you're mentioning that ultimately, like Siddha Papa was saying, austerity, so they perform such pious act, but instead of wanting to use it to serve Krishna, because that's what piety is meant for, you know, then they're actually trying to use it against the Lord. So that's probably what makes them come into a form of life, you know.
Yeah.
Whether in the same life, they become very powerful, like demons, or they take birth in
they must pass through some suffering. Anyway, since you mentioned, I know it's late, but since you mentioned like how to engage, I was thinking to speak about how to engage our sinful demoniac tendency in us. This is best way probably to purify it. And a few classes away, somebody said, if you're angry, use it against demons and mention Hanuman. But I was just thinking about that. It's not, anger is not something you decide to be. Just something triggers your anger, and mostly because you're living with devotees, it will be displayed among devotees. It's not like I can press the button and go on the street of London, okay, let me find some demon to use my anger. It's not something which you choose to be. So how you can engage, like Prabhupada also said, you know, Hanuman uses anger to destroy Lanka. But it's not, I choose when I be angry, you know, like it just happens and then I'm totally blanked. And whatever is around, whoever is around, you know. So that's interesting. How you engage, really. Even lust, you know, okay. But lust kind of, it comes kind of like a cultivation, you know. When you feel really struggling with lust, you cannot control your mind, thoughts going on. And a little bit by little, you feed, and it grows, and it grows. And the end is like pressure cooker. You're gonna go nuts, or you do something. So in that sense, you know, you can kind of maybe control. You can. It's a process, really. You know, engage in Krishna service. But anger is just so sudden, boom, what you do. Anyone has no thoughts of that because we need to resolve this. How you doing? What you do with anger? I'm struggling with that, really. Like, I just for no reason, God's sake, you know. Anyone has thoughts? You know, how to engage anger? What is it? Like, is this really something which you can choose to be or not to choose to be? It's difficult, so, you know. Or maybe in super calm when I go in the town, like say Harinam, somebody harassing some devotee. Okay, we have a chance, those who are fighters. But I'm okay. A few times happened, once in Harinam, there were big demonstrations on the Leicester Square. So many gangs there. Police has to come with the smoke bombs. to scatter them away. I remember these guys came, came with Harinam inside of the crowd, chanting. And these guys kind of so-called, you know, around us, like jumping. But then they just tried to provoke the fight. It was just pushing that. I remember once somebody kicked me really badly. Not so badly, you know, but they kicked me from the back. You know, like someone missed me, but I didn't even turn. I didn't want to, you know. I was kind of not even angry, you know. It was funny. They just want to pick up fight. So how you know, and then other time I'd be just so angry, I would just, you know, destroy universe. And then, of course, devotees are around, and the display is there, and they get the reactions. So how you do this, you know, to engage anger against, I don't know, you know.
Thanks, Prabhupada, for your class. But isn't there a better way than say, okay, you say you can engage it. That's very practical.
Yeah.
But is there another way we can maybe...
suppress?
No, you can't suppress anger.
Yeah.
They say, it is said. But we can become aware of it. So yeah. By being present is one way of being aware of it.
It is easy to say.
Sorry?
It's easy to say. I can just
comment. It's something we can cultivate.
Yeah, yeah. We can cultivate it, over time. Definitely.
And then, it's not so... anger is not a bad thing, really, but becoming aware of it when you what situation trigger you.
Yeah.
You know. And maybe you can try to avoid those situations.
Yeah, that's the one.
Or you can say, okay, I will try and remain present. And when we remain present, we can see the anger coming on. And before it sinks us, then we can actually... not react, but we can respond. It's the reaction is a problem, you see. We react because we're upset.
Yeah, just sudden.
Exactly. Sudden. But if responding means something happens, there's a gap, you don't commit yourself, you think about it, and then you respond. It's that time, it's critical, that gap.
Yeah, yeah. But there's most of the people who deal with that, they advise, make a pause. Don't act straightly, whatever, it's just pause.
And that's difficult.
This would be great if you just remember that. What is our Atmika Shakti, covering potency? This happened in my case. Boom, you're totally covered. You forget who you are, what you're doing, who is around you. For the moment, and later you realize, of course, after many, many times, slowly start to be aware of that it's possible. You know, I mean, I can say it to everybody. I mean, I've been in situation... Unfortunately, seeing myself, seeing most of you also, when you press the button, person is defensive, very defensive for small thing. So it's in us, so it's not me alone. It's helping, you know, just not me alone, suffering. You know, false ego just must be on the top to give it up. I mean, like even Lord Brahma, his body is made of intelligence. Total intelligence. Recently, Nishkinchana Prabhu said, when you know the Shastric knowledge, it can help you, this knowledge, to apply to you know, slowly grains in your behavior. It can. But when you see Brahma, he has all intelligence in material creation. But he controls, suppresses. But he's there. So I guess we cannot be free of that. He says, one who controls, tolerates anger, means he's there, you suppress. You know, only special jivas can maybe be free totally. In a word, somebody says, you just don't care, you know, it's like you are cool, you know. See, I don't see the possibility in this material world. You can only be expert to suppress, to control, to not to act, to create bigger problems. But to be totally free is not possible. I'm not affected, yeah.
Prabhu, you did say demons... created. How do you explain that?
He spoke desire. Krishna facilitated desire. You see, like everybody has this demonic tendency, even in us. Just you call mind. There are demonic tendency in us. It can be in small degree, but extreme tendency of the demonic qualities. That means demon. You personify demon. So Jesus gives you hint how demons are created. Krishna just allows everybody to be whatever he wants. But it's arranged in such a way that slowly after so many lifetimes, it can be purified and it can be given chance because eventually living entities will go back home, back to God. Also, Krishna said, those who are demoniac, I never give them chance, never give them mercy. this kind of paradox. But it's actually, when you're a demon, you label yourself as a demon, you never get chance. Never get chance for self-realization. Never get mercy. You cast to hell. But it's next moment when you turn to be a devotee, you get all mercy. That's how it works. You don't get mercy, you become devotee, you get all mercy. It's just a switch. Therefore, Krishna says, if you label yourself as demon, you'll never get mercy. Very simple. So, anyway, let's finish. I thank you all. And Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande, Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai.